Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes, Hugo.
Hey, man.
You're looking good, man. You're looking, I like this, you had a little shave.
Yeah, I tried to fade my beard, but I end up looking like a sort of a cat.
Yeah.
Like a Chicago sort of racist traffic cop.
Yeah, that gets a burger and a foil, eats half of it, chucks it in the bin because he's got a call through.
Yeah. He's not worried about his sort of calorie intake.
No.
He's
no.
Living.
Yeah. And he's angry at everyone because of it subconsciously.
Yeah, he just thinks he's unfortunate. He eats the same as Mendez, but Mendez is Hispanic with great genes.
Yeah. Oh, shout out Mendez. Hey, listen, man. I'm very excited for this guest today, man.
Are you?
Oh, big time. Are you?
Yeah. I'm so excited. My hands are clammy.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Nice. You could make some sort of homemade glue from the juice from your hands.
My sweat is so thick in the palm of my hand.
Yeah. Well, listen, today's guest is someone very special.
It is.
Yeah. Straight out of our ancestral comedic bloodline.
Straight from the slums of Shaolin.
Yeah, straight from the source, yeah?
Yeah.
Some would say that I've known him for the last 12 years of my life and that you've practically grown up with him.
Yeah, I was born with him.
Yeah, and guess what? They'd be right in saying so. And guess how I'm spelling the word right?
Oh, come on.
With a W, because he's a writer, yeah?
Yeah.
But not only that, he's the only man that's skilled enough to play the highest level Wiggy Mess, the wiggiest of all messes.
Yeah.
Yeah? The multi-talented, emotionless genius, one-third of the Stampede Brothers, it's Stephen Stamp.
Bish out of shell.
This is nothing more than an intro.
Here he is, in the flesh. Man like Steve, how you doing?
I'm honoured to be sitting behind the scenes.
You're welcome, man.
Be part of it, fully involved.
We're probably going to be talking to you like we don't know you at parts, but just pretend.
Yeah, I feel like whenever we do something sort of staged or like on literally on a stage or like like that documentary we did recently, like it always feels really weird and sort of
serious
that we're pretending to talk to each other.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make it not like that.
Yeah, because like I say, it always feels like we're on some weird podcast, and now we are on a weird podcast.
Exactly.
But what I love about this one, right, and because I don't obviously do many podcasts or anything, but what I like about this is that there's the bar's so low because you've called it chatting shit. So you can't, nobody's expecting anything good. And if you try and say something too profound, it's almost like a bit weird because it's like you're chatting shit, so you're sort of belittling the thing that you're trying to get deep about.
Yeah, and in a way, it's like we're too intelligent to be profound. Do you know what I mean? Because that's a given. It's nice to just relax and chat shit for once a week.
There's that other podcast, the other podcast you're working on, which is really amazing and political.
Yeah, profound theories of the third kind.
Different outfits as well. Really smart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All just roll necks and suits.
Yeah.
And the other podcast.
Yeah.
This one's more like top half tracksuit, bottom half naked.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what I went for anyway.
Using Domino's garlic dip as an ashtray.
That's the vibe of this podcast. This is the Domino's dip ashtray of the podcast world.
Yeah, that's quite a good quote, actually.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's a good ashtray.
You're welcome.
Hugo, can you write that down?
Yeah, I'll remember it.
Also, have you washed it out first? Does the garlic residue hit the end of the spliff?
Yeah, no, it's still wash in it out. Yeah. When you want to put it out, then it helps put it out as well, effectively.
Yeah. And it's almost like a garlic incense for the last bit of smoke.
It's like a sealant, you know, like seal the top of the soup. Done.
Yeah.
Do you know what? The fire service would be up for that. I feel like it's a safe way to put out your cigarettes or
what's
or
that in the bottom of the ashtray? Is that it's garlic and herb dip dispenser. It's just stops house fires.
Is that because do you listen to the Chet and Shit podcast? Yeah. But that's not even one of the actual Domino's dip. No, I made my own garlic mayonnaise and put it in the bottom of my actual ashtray.
Good.
As a safety measure.
I whipped up an aioli because I'm really into cooking as well.
You wouldn't believe what's in the fire extinguisher. Hot sauce. This fire stinks.
But it's making me hungry.
It smells of hot mayo.
This fire is really burning me, but it smells banging.
Like a fire blanket soaked in barbecue sauce. Just like a weird condiment. I'm taking it too far now.
Pouring ketchup over your head because it's fireproof. The fireman turns up and goes, did you go for the ketchup? Yeah, good, well done. A lot of people go for the tin tomatoes and it doesn't work.
Thank God for the Chat and Shit podcast and the knowledge that they're spreading.
Talking of the Chat and Shit podcast, you're on it.
Yeah. I know.
As I said, obviously, we know what you've been up to, but how has lockdown and everything been for you, man?
Oh, it's quite a weird one, isn't it? I feel like I should have some sort of a stand-up routine response to this by now. But
that's what we want.
I don't. Yeah, that's what you want.
Oh, like
you want
one little story.
Yeah, some sort of snappy anecdote that sums it all up. Yeah.
I want a well-crafted Jonathan Ross story with real heavy on the semi-lie.
Yeah. Legs crossed halfway through, sort of getting into it. Yeah. I don't know, really. It's been like a year now.
Yeah,
I know.
Which is insane. So
that's why it's a weird question to even ask, because we started this podcast in the first lockdown, and I thought by now we'd all be in, you know what I mean, sitting in the studio together. It's still relevant, that question, which is mad.
Yeah. I've been through waves of at first it was kind of nice because everything got cancelled, and I kind of enjoyed the fact that it just everything became so simple, and I love that. I love just having a simple sort of existence, and the fact that I didn't even have any sort of social pressures or any work pressures, or I still had enough to get on with, but it was I was relieved of all of the pressures basically. But
yeah, like the external pressures, and I guess because usually you'd have all these deadlines, but you'd be juggling it with trying to have a social life as well.
Yeah, and you always feel guilty if you don't see people enough, and you don't. Now you feel like you're doing a good thing by not seeing people. You're like, I'm being really
isolating.
I'm a real big fan of the NHS, so I can't come out.
Yeah,
I can't see you.
That's fine. Well, how about we just do a Zoom party later? Oh, my internet's down.
Yeah.
I don't want to overdo the Zoom as well, because that could create issues, and then again it might have a knock-on effect on the NHS somehow.
You never know. They used to say smoking was fine for you in the 50s. Years later you find, do you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know, with Zoom,
a lot of Wi-Fi radiation at the moment. Trying to stay away from that.
But we had that sort of period where we were allowed out again for a bit, and everyone was kind of like, oh sick, we're allowed to do stuff, and we all sort of tentatively went into the pubs and started hanging out again, and in groups of six and all of that. And that was actually quite, now I look back on that and I'm like, oh man, I fucking miss those days. It was quite sick.
Yeah, it's true.
And now it's gone back to the sort of second lockdown. I feel like that's all the fun of it being stripped down and whatever is that's all gone now. I'm like, yeah. I want a complicated life again.
Yeah.
I want to fucking feel anxiety
for a bit
and like be surrounded by people I don't like that much. I'm down.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
it's true, man. Like, I feel like now this lockdown after Christmas is just like, this is it. It just still feels like 2020. Do you know what I mean? For me, it's just 2020 till the summer, and then hopefully, do you know what I mean?
Well, the year starts when the lockdown ends, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah,
yeah, it's true.
This is a very useful part of the show for when you need things to do. It's the recommendation part.
Obviously, to say we've all had so much more time on our hands. So,
what have you
been watching or listening to or reading that you can recommend for the people still in Lochol?
In Lochol, what could I? Recently, I've seen a few sick things. The Sound of Metal, the Riz Ahmed film.
Oh man,
me. Mad!
Yeah,
that was a proper blew my mind sort of movie. That's a good one. Definitely watch that.
That's the best film I've seen in a while, and not only the storyline, but his acting is just insane.
And it's just such an original story as well. It's sort of an insight into a world that you just don't even think about, if you know what I mean. Which is where the best stories exist a lot of the time.
100%.
There's also that on the same sort of on that note, that one that you recommended, I'm going to try and say it in a French accent, Les Misérables.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. That one, that's another one that's it feels so authentic and another of those films that you watch and you're like, fuck, you feel like you've been on a journey sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing. That one's on Netflix as well. If whoever wants to watch it, because it's easy to get. I think it's Sound of Metal. That's still not out yet, is it? Properly?
I don't know how I got that.
No, that's you must have got a link direct from the Oscars.
Someone,
somebody else's laptop supplied it.
Nothing to do with Pirate Bay.
No, exactly.
No.
Don't even say that because you will get raided.
Yeah. That, and that's true. You will get raided. A guy we know was adamant that it does happen.
That's a story, Ryland.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
Everyone listening out there, when we used to do the webisodes, there used to be this guy called Ryland that we knew, and we used his house, and we made him another character in one of the episodes. But he's pretty much like that in real life. And first time I met him, he was like, "Yeah, I got 2 terabytes worth of illegally download films on and music on my hard drive." I was like, "All right." And he was like, "Yeah, so you know what I mean, it's a little bit of a dodgy one." I was like, "Why?" And he was like, "Well, you could get raided at any time. So you're taking that risk."
He was such an amazing find, man.
Yeah, he was, man.
When we met him, it was just like, oh my God, we need to just include him.
I remember when I first met him and he was in that flat that we filmed in, but surrounding him was kind of like his, I don't know, it was like, he had all his music equipment, lighting equipment.
Yeah.
And was very, you're not allowed to go there. You're not allowed to enter that realm. And I found him fascinating immediately.
Yeah, he's a techie guy, man.
Yeah.
Shout out Ryland, man. Ryan Air.
Yeah.
Do you reckon he listens to your podcast and stuff?
Dunno.
I feel like he would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he message you or anything?
I ain't spoken to him for years. Ryland, if you're out there, get in contact, man.
Yeah.
Have him as a guest.
Please, Ryan.
We should get Ryanair on, 100%.
That'd be sick.
If anyone out there is listening and knows the reference we're talking about, message us about Ryanair and we'll try and track him down and get him on.
Yeah.
Man, like Ryland.
He's genuinely an interesting character, man.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, yeah. So I've started watching kind of again that I had seen a bit of, but I realized I hadn't seen most of it was the US Office. The American Office. I haven't seen loads of it. I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And I got kind of put off because
so good.
When I first started watching it, I was sort of still, I had the English Office in my head too much. And I was kind of it's just nowhere near as good. It's too wacky and whatever, but the levels are amazing, man. When you just sort of separate it from that, from the English one, it's so...
Yeah, I find you just got to look at them as two separate entities. And also another tip is to start a series two, because then they're not just recreating series one storylines. I'm like, fucking Steve Carell's a G, man.
Yeah, he's
he makes it, innit?
Yeah, he's kind of like, he pushes things to the, like, he gets away with so much. He pushes things to the edge where I'm like, I would never think that that could be all right in a like mainstream comedy. He's proper like racist and sexist. Like, he says some of the worst shit in it, but he does it in this weird... So he gets away with it because he's kind of adorable.
Yeah, he's innocent.
At the same time. Like a child, you know, like when a child doesn't understand something and it's like, whoa, you can't say that. But he's not saying it from like an evil way. It's just the child doesn't know.
It's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
It all comes from a place where he just wants everyone to like him.
Exactly, exactly. And I love that you always think he's learned his lesson and then he sort of pulls the carpet from underneath right at the last minute. Which,
I enjoy the small weird things that make him happy, like that restaurant he goes to with Chili's. Jan. Yeah, yeah. Just little things like that are amazing because it makes you think of like you want to know more. And his little TV and fucking
and he's sick at hockey.
Yeah, amazing at hockey. And what's it called? The grill at the bottom. His bed and shit.
Oh, yeah, there's one episode.
Yeah, but he burns his foot.
He burns his foot and then it cuts to him going, all right then. So, you know, sometimes I like to wake up to the smell of bacon in the morning. All right. Is that weird? So I put a little grill at the end of my bed, wake up 10 minutes before my alarm goes off and put a bit of bacon on there, go back to sleep. And I burnt my foot this morning.
And then it gets to the point where he's got a man in a wheelchair coming into the office to give a talk and he keeps on sort of agreeing with him and saying that he can relate with his bubble wrapped foot. It's so, they're taking it so far, man, but it's incredible. Yeah.
Nah, it's amazing, man. Fuck, yeah. Anyone that hasn't watched The American Office, because they're a diehard UK Office fan, give it a go, man. Shout out Issa. He got in it recently as well.
Yeah, just don't watch it thinking of the English one.
Yeah, ignore that.
No, just think of you guys.
Yeah, think of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly. Do you know, I watched this weekend. This is more like a sort of serious and intense, but that Can't Get You Out of My Head. Is that what it's called? The Adam Curtis documentary.
Oh, my days. The BBC thing.
Yeah. It's like a... I mean, it's hard to even describe what it is. It's like a documentary about human sort of power struggles and the history of like how we've ended up kind of where we are is like a, I guess, politically. And
yeah,
I guess it's good because it kind of helps to understand, like, because I'm interested in like conspiracy theories and shit like that, and it sort of touches on that stuff, but like it helps get a sense of how fucking complicated it all is and how you can't really like distill it all down to just like there's a few people who are making these big decisions. And that's the whole problem with conspiracy theories, is that like or even just like people trying to get their heads around stuff, like COVID obviously is a big one at the moment, but it's like you have to think about all of the things that have informed all of the things that have got us to this point.
And
it runs so deep and it's so complex, and it's an interesting
thing about that program is that it doesn't just show, like, we've always seen, you know, I don't know, like America, the superpower, and why they're where they are, and politically, like things that have happened in these first world countries. But this shows you like that all corners of the world, what's happening at exactly the same time, and how that's raised a, in a negative or positive way, like a social awareness to one thing, and pushes people towards a certain thing. And like the history of conspiracy theories and where that sort of almost fashion came from, like before people.
Yeah. Do you know what the maddest thing is? That I had never heard of the... There's a thing in it called Operation Headfuck.
Yeah, I had never.
Where it's basically these geezers like start a rumor. They start deliberately a conspiracy theory about the Bavarian Illuminati.
Yeah.
And they put an article in like Playboy to just deliberately plant that sort of idea and to try and like experiment with how far that could go. And it's literally like people now, like to this day are still talking about the Illuminati and sort of that's where it stopped. That's the seed of it. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of, yeah. I was looking at that like, how have I never even heard of that before?
Yeah, same. There's so many things on there that that are really educational. Even to people like yourself, like you said, you're interested in these things anyway.
Yeah.
And they're, some of it's pretty big as well. It's not like a little underground. You know what I mean? It's like where conspiracy theories came from. Do you know what I mean? It's obviously public knowledge.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, no, it's a sick program, man. It's one of them ones as well. It's like, I'm only on episode 2, by the way. What? How many have you seen?
I'm on the last one now. So
okay,
6.
Yeah.
Episode 6.
Because I kind of wonder where it goes.
This sounds amazing. What's this called?
I think it's called Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Yeah.
I Play It, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's proper, man.
I'm going to watch that tonight.
You got to be sort of like, you got to be ready. You got to be sitting up, engaged vibes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's quite...
Oh, I'm ready.
It's quite like, it's quite a lot of history and politics bang. Shit. But like, it's interesting because
it... Sounds like me.
But it does it in a way that's like quite like interesting little stories rather than like trying to do every, you know, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good for
people. It's not like old paintings and that. No. It's fucking footage. Yeah, there we go.
It's really good for people like you with a tiny mind, Hugo.
Yeah.
Little bits here and there.
Case studies. Little unique.
Okay.
Little individuals.
Perfect. Yeah, no, because if Sipa can watch, I can definitely watch it.
It's also directed really nicely as well, though, because that quite, it's almost like at times it looks like something that you'd see. You know, like when you're walking through like an art gallery and there's like a little room playing something.
Yeah, it's like that, no, it's like the all the sort of archive footage is so sick.
Yeah, and the soundtrack, the music they use.
Yeah,
is sick.
The music is sick. Yeah, it's true. It's really well done, man. It's good.
Hey guys, it's Ron here. I've been feeling a little bit anxious recently. But I'm hoping to get over it. So I'm just having a little listen to this podcast to calm me down right now. Okay. See y'all later.
All right, let's take this back a little, Stevie. Do you know what? I was going to say I know loads, but actually there's loads that I probably don't know. I want to know, like, way before, like, PJDN and all that, what was your, like, first, like, what did you want to be creatively, and what was your first step into that, you know?
Trying to think.
That's right. I mean, cut the thing. Right,
yeah, just cut all that out. I don't know. When I was a kid, I mean, even when I was like a teenager, I didn't really know what I wanted to do or anything. I didn't have any sort of, I was just sort of going along with it step by step. So it's like sort of in school, just to get grades and then like get to the next stage of that, get A levels, get, you know what I mean? I was just I was kind of academic, I guess, a bit. Like, I wanted to get good grades and stuff like that. And then,
That's what interests me because, like, when I speak to, like, you know, Hugo or Asim or whatever, I'd be like, obviously, I know your first thing was music and that got you into it. Do you know what I mean? And especially me and Hugo, we never thought, oh, we're going to, you know, like, we're going to write a script one day. That wasn't in our, do you know what I mean? So it's like, and I know DJ and stuff like that. So like, I guess like, yeah, what was your first, like,
I guess in terms of,
in that sort of sense of in the art world,
I guess like relevant kind of moments would be kind of DJing and doing stuff with Hugo and obviously my other mates as well, who were sort of funny and being sort of the clowns in school and stuff like that. That was a natural thing that we didn't really, I guess we weren't aware of at the time, but now you look back and you think, oh yeah, I guess that was kind of an important part of my, me becoming who I am sort of thing.
Yeah.
We were definitely the clowns in school. And like,
the first thing
I wrote.
When did you two meet each other? How long, like, were you literally raised together?
Who, me and Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah, year 7.
We met in secondary school.
Right, yeah.
I moved down his street, basically.
So do you two remember when you kind of realised you clicked with a sense of humour kind of thing?
He took his top off. I jumped on his back. No, I'm joking. I can't remember the exact moments, really. I guess it sort of would have been like, you know, those sort of moody, like teenage kind of relationships where you're like, you kind of just stand like together at the train station and then you kind of gradually realize that you're mates kind of.
Yeah.
It was like proximity kind of brought us together. And then also the fact we knew, like,
I remember when I first met you, I went and played football with you and your brothers. And I was like, fucking hell. Like, they're really good. This isn't even fun. Like,
to be intense. Because when we played, it was like, it was proper, like, people wearing like
serious
full kits. Serious. And stuff. Remember that guy, John? There was a geezer called John. Shout out John. Oh, was it John Richardson? I think his name was. And he used to come play with us, but he was always in goal. But he had a full goalie outfit with the gloves, everything, well intense. And obviously, like, because we're brothers, I think we're just competitive with each other. And that sort of rubs off on everyone else who's playing as well. So it's just this like really organized game.
Yeah, it was serious. But I do remember, shout out Albo that listens to this. I do remember we went swimming and Albo wore white trunks. And me and you both found it proper joke and he got really pissed off about it.
Yeah.
But then we all went McDonald's after. And I feel like that was kind of, I guess, a moment where it was like, oh, yeah, this is joke hanging around with these guys. That's how I felt.
No, that's good. Yeah. Do you know why I asked Steve? Because, and then, you know, and Hugo again had to validate the story, but, prove it, sorry. Because when I asked Hugo that, he said, it was the moment I realized that there's something special there. And when I asked you, you said it was proximity.
I said it was proximity at first. And then.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized it was special.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's a weird thing though. When you're growing up, you don't really have an eye on like how you're developing or what you're becoming or anything like that. You're just caught up in like the day to day sort of fucking around with your mates and everything.
Yeah.
So like, that's sort of what it was in a way. And I think looking back, it's obvious that like there was a few key people in my life that were catalysts in my like creative stuff and especially music. Hugo was definitely a massive part of my musical kind of development, I guess, becoming a DJ, like buying vinyl and stuff. That was all just me and Hugo. I didn't really know other people that were doing that really that much.
But and same with you and sort of putting me onto like rap and Neptunes and shit like that and 80s music.
Our mate Tim is another person who I have to shout out for that sort of musical influence. Like he had these like older cousins who were very into music, and I remember they were proper like nerds about it. And it was at that time where Neptunes were making their sickest beats, like Timbaland was making amazing stuff, and we were like massive collectors of all of that. And then there was like there was the 80s stuff. Like he got me into Prince, and and I got so into Prince that the first script I ever wrote
was entitled Letter to Prince.
It almost was though. It was our sixth form pantomime, right?
Right.
And every year there was like this sixth form pantomime that we performed to like the old people's home would come in as our like audience, and obviously like the mums and dads and whatever. And
that's sweet, man.
And so but it was always ridiculous. Like it was chaotic, and there wasn't like it wasn't high standard at all. So it was like, I felt like, yeah, I could do this. I can write this. And I wrote, it was Aladdin, but it was a sort of mental version of Aladdin where basically I was the genie and I was like Northern. So it's called Our Lad instead of Aladdin. And the whole soundtrack, and I was going out with the girl who was playing the princess.
Oh,
and
God.
At the end, the genie just scooped up the princess and basically was just like, went off with the princess. That was the twist at the end. And but the whole soundtrack was Prince, like all the way through. So there was like a whole bit where we did like a whole dance to like When Doves Cry, and like none of it made any sense.
Yeah.
And even when I scooped up the princess at the end, the song playing, this would have gone over all the old people's heads, was Head by Prince, which is literally a song about getting head. And that was like, to me, the most funny, like hidden thing to like,
to put in
there.
Yeah. It's very naughty.
Very naughty. Yeah. So there was stuff like that.
What I mean. Stuff like that. I don't know anything about, cause like, I never even like writing a script or anything like at that age wouldn't have ever come into my head. Do you know what I mean? So I guess it always was in you to explore that role, I guess.
Yeah, but I think it was partly that obviously there was just this tradition of like people, the sort of sixth formers doing this like ridiculous play. And it was like, there wasn't sort of, I guess because I was so, I loved like being at school and even sixth form, like I just liked the social side of it. So I was always like kind of into that stuff. And I wasn't threatened by the idea of doing, like now it sort of seems quite mad that I would be the one that would like volunteer to do something like that in a way. But but in that circle, I felt like I was, the one that was gonna, like, I felt like it would be fun. And it was just me and all my mates doing it. So it was sort of easy.
Yeah.
And just like, there was no pressure really.
And I guess like you say, it already been a tradition. So, you know, whatever, like someone has to be the one that puts the script together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I see like my mates the year before do it. And I was like, they like had a proper fun time doing it and stuff. And so I just thought, And I had an Asian friend, so he was obviously a laddie.
Sunny.
That's actually, it's a bit weird when I think about it. But
was it Sunny?
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out Sunny, man.
Sunny was our lad, yeah. Big up Sunny.
Yeah, sick.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. Right about now, you are locked into the legendary Chat and Shit podcast, lad. With Alan Sheep and Mustafa, Hugo Chegwin, and a nice little special guest there. So kick back, tune in, and listen, you might hear something you like.
Where did it go from there? Like, we met around the ages of 25, 24. So there's obviously a gap before.
Yeah, so I guess when I went to uni, I was like, I went to Sussex. I did English Lit. I like studied books, essentially. And and I got quite into words. Like, I was the power of words and stuff like that, and storytelling as well. Like, I was kind of into that, and I like the idea of writing stuff. So I sort of got into writing more there, and sort of was just like writing weird little sort of comics, almost like just kind of bullshit. I had a thing that I wanted to do that was called Back of the Bus, which was just like two dickheads at the back of a bus having a really disgusting conversation, and I wanted to turn that into like a little animated series. And then I had some other thing where I wanted to do like a sort of South Park, but like the British version of South Park. And we developed that for a little bit, me and Tim, called like Wasteman, I think it was called. Everything's Wasteman. It's like Asim simultaneously has started up a YouTube thing with the same name at the same time. Yeah. Just the laziest thing to call your project. But so I did like a few little kind of I just wanted to make things, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And then I came out of uni, was just in that fucking limbo where you're just like there's no jobs. I got kind of stuck in Sussex because I couldn't like get a job in London, and I couldn't afford to live in London without any work. So I kind of got stuck in Sussex working for like the council in East Sussex, which is quite mad. But when I look back, it's quite amazing as well, because I met a lot of characters there.
It's inspirational.
Yeah, but that's sort of around the time when I met you, because I basically saved up while I was there to go traveling as a sort of way of like, I don't know, making myself feel better about my life.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Finally, something. And then obviously, we ended up hanging out in Thailand and sort of doing a lot of like character
development,
like voices. Again, it was like we weren't really aware that we were doing it at the time, but it was like part of this thing that would then become us developing characters for a TV show. And the rest is history.
now we're here, guys.
Yeah. You've talked about the rest of it on the podcast, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what, though? What's interesting, we found this with like when we chatted to like Decoy and Lily and that, but like hearing your perspective of like, let's say, so the Thailand thing is, you're out in Thailand and me and Hugo flew out there, and it's pretty much the first time I'd ever met you.
Yeah.
What was your perspective on that dynamic?
Because you'd never met Sipa before, and especially at that time, Sipa was quite intense. Like,
only at that time.
Yeah. Not anymore. Like, we were still young. Like, he would text you four nans, Jeremy, 50,000 times. That's not a joke.
It's funnier, the more you do it, the funnier it gets.
The more annoying.
Or he'd call you and go, my mate Joel's fuming at you, man, for what you did. You need to call him. Like, and then going, what? And I've got to go, I'm about to go into somewhere. But I'll text you his number, bye. And then, like, just shit like that. It's not even funny, but it is quite funny.
And then you call Joel, like, are you fuming at me? He's like, what?
No, it's just Sipa being a dickhead, bro. Like, all right, man.
I mean, he didn't like, I don't remember sort of getting pranked by Sipa so much. It was definitely a bit mad though, because we were like, me and Josh were sort of on this like world like trip that we were doing. So we'd already come through China and like had this like mad fucking intense thing of like going to Beijing, and then like we went down to Hong Kong, and like we'd already sort of felt like we were like on, we had our big backpacks and like, we were like the archetypal like sort of traveler gap year twats basically. Literally, and I was writing in a little pad,
I remember
writing my gap year sort of chronicles and like drawing like pictures and shit. It's kind
of just thinking you and Josh like sort of super calm, like, you know, calm, good vibes, mad calm. And then Sipa turns up, like fuming at a taxi driver, fag hanging out his mouth.
You know what?
It's fucking boiling.
20 snapbacks attached to my backpack.
Yes. You know what, though? Do you know what? I loved it, though, because I was like, I kind of needed a bit
chaos
of that. Because Josh is well chilled out. And like, he's the best traveling companion in the world. Like, I don't know if there's anyone else who
super
I could
calm,
do that sort of amount of traveling.
No drama.
We never had drama. It was just, even if we were just like dropped off at 3 a.m. on the top of a mountain and we didn't know where we were staying and we couldn't speak the language, we'd just be like very calmly just like, all right, cool, let's head this way.
Where's Sipa? And me, to be fair, would be like, what the fuck is going on?
Looking at each other. Why don't we know what we're doing?
We're looking at you, Steve. Why don't you know what we're doing?
You're the tallest one. You should know.
Smoking fags.
Can't you look from up there?
You're the tallest one, so you're our dad. But yeah, it was fun. Like all of the.
Also, I wasn't specifically asking what it's like to meet me earlier.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
So go into like the full moon parties and that stuff about like pretending to be on pills and the sort of the birth of like the Steve shit. And even like even just the appreciation of how like weird it all was and being able to laugh at everything so fucking much.
Sleeping in a fucking game cafe on bunk beds.
Waking
up from fainting surrounded by kids.
With a painting of Killer Mario.
But what you do, like, and I feel like both of you, but especially Siba, is that like you're so tuned into like when things aren't kind of as you expect them to be, that it becomes, and the comedy of that though, and why that's like amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So like when there's a weird like character in the room, you like you can look at each other and you all know like that guy's fucking that guy's joke. And when you have that sort of connection with someone like instantly, that and you know you're all on the same wavelength, that's quite like unique.
You almost don't have to say, like you say, all you need to do. I've been in meetings with you, Steve, when someone says something that no one even noticed. And then we'll just look at each other in the corner, all right, carry on looking straight forward. And we know then that we've basically gone.
It's worse on Zoom. I see you do it on Zoom sometimes where like somebody's saying something really serious, but they'll use like a weird word or something. And then you just go. Or I see you look down at your phone and I know I'm about to get a text being like, what? What was that?
Or I heard you, mate.
But that sort of way of looking at the world and the sort of just the sort of being tuned into the ridiculousness of the world is like, is such a good thing to, I don't know, to sort of have, and a good way to like process everything and to like enjoy things, because it's like it just makes everything funny. And I feel like after that, even for the rest of the trip, I feel like I had that in my head a little bit, like because I had sort of experienced that in Thailand sort of thing.
Fucking so many amazing moments, man. This is a great time.
Also, this is probably more of a poignant moment. Do you remember the moment where, so like Beats and Grinder, well, they weren't even called that then. They were just two voices me and Hugo used to do.
Yeah.
And then we spoke to you about like a fuckhead character and you came up with Steve's, and that was, we used to go up to people, like you said, on the beaches out there and you'd pretend you're buzzing out your mind to like people that were on.
But I don't feel like there was a separation between all the characters. It was more like we all were doing this, like, what are you saying? Like Beats and Grinder. It was like that was sort of it was all one voice. And then the Steve's version, Steve's was a sort of slightly different, more extreme version of the same voice almost. But like even in the early YouTube stuff, all three of us are kind of doing the same voice, but like slightly different.
And it was a voice based on that trip,
It was sort of like a voice that you do, Sipa, and like in that trip we all kind of took it on, and with a character, I guess.
It's a proper Chesterton voice, that
original Chesterton voice, right? But then when it,
and that's where the Steve's, like the S on the end came from that voice, that
Chesterton, right?
Because I remember us being on like I think it was like a 12-hour coach or some shit.
It was a train. Then,
A train,
with the bunk
beds. No, not that.
Oh, shit.
But like another time when we was on a coach, and I remember you being behind us and you saying like, we should maybe try and do something with these characters or something like that. And I remember being like, yeah, definitely. But in my mind thinking, nothing ever happens. You can't do shit. Nothing happens, man. Like that could never happen. But
I remember we'd done Blazing Unit, and you were aware, you were like talking about Blazing Unit, and you sort of were like, oh, because you were MC obviously, so it was like and I feel like we'd sort of stopped doing it at that point, but we were kind of like,
wait, hold on, you got to explain what Blazing Unit is.
So Blazing Unit was a sort of a fake garage crew on MySpace that was basically me and Hugo, Leon
and Josh
and Josh. But yeah, basically at that point, I feel like we'd sort of stopped doing it. So like when we were doing these kind of new voices, I guess we were sort of trying to figure out where they could live or what we should do with them.
Oh, do you know what? Me and Hugo watched fuck loads of Tower Block Dreams as well before we come out and met you. So I think that's what was in our heads as well, the whole pirate radio set.
Yeah, 100%.
I think we might have explained it to you without seeing it, probably the whole trip.
Yeah. I feel like even after, like I watched it, but I wasn't like as obsessed. Like I hadn't sort of learned it as much as you lot had in a way.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't watching it back like over and over again. So it wasn't as much in my head as it was in yours, I guess. But I can't remember the point where we started thinking of...
I feel like it was pretty much when you got back.
I think when you got back, you just came round to my flat.
Mine and Hugo's flat.
Yeah, with Ben. Yeah. And it was like, we're going to try and film something.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like we were chatting about it. Because also, before we did that studio time thing, people just do nothing. Not many people know this. This is a scoop. But it was going to be about a tower block. And in different rooms, you had different characters. Like in different flats, you had different characters.
But that, I feel like that was later. I feel like that was when we'd already done the sort of the core characters. And then we started thinking, how could we take it to another level?
Right, yeah.
But before that, I remember we were filming stuff while we were in Thailand. So there was videos of like that I've got of you like on the beach where you're like beaning and just sort of running up to the camera going, Shapa.
Yes, bro. I need to be on pills.
Yeah, and I was sending you videos after that as well, and I guess we were sending each other stuff of like us kind of pretending doing those characters a little bit, and then I guess it evolved into like let's do a slightly more polished version of that where we're together.
Mm.
I
guess that's how it happened in my head, and then like you say, when I got back, I was just so like bored of what I was doing, and like sort of this felt like something to sort of grab hold of, like a sort of opportunity to, and a catalyst to make something more interesting, you know, and more sort of with people that were like,
because I feel like when you were saying about your uni thing about back of the bus and then your South Park idea with Tim, I remember you talking about that, and when we would meet up, Blazing Unit was your pushing, like you that was your sort of idea to do that, and I facilitated it
because you were learning. That was when you started learning beats at that time, like as in you were learning production.
Yeah,
so it was like some of the first beats you were making.
Yeah,
was the Blazing Unit.
But then
beat.
I also feel people just do nothing, like you were the, like what you said, you were the one sort of with the push, like turning up with Ben. Obviously, we knew about it, but sort of making it be filmed.
Yeah.
I feel like me and Hugo, like, even with music, I was going to say, like, everything just felt like it was just, I don't know, it's pointless because nothing ever happens kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, we didn't really have that confidence, that push. You know, and that's why we all work so well together. I feel like you were the first person that, well, I'd met anyway, but like collectively, you know, me and Hugo had met, that would put these ideas into something and say, let's try it. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't think if you didn't turn up with Ben and you weren't like, I want to try something, I don't think it would have just existed on our phones. And
And again, that's another key person, I would say, like Ben being so, because Ben's proper proactive as well. So like Ben Murray, he's got like the fact that he's now like got his own production company and is like, you know, like a successful director. Like he was doing stuff back then, like making music videos.
Putting
and stuff.
Raves.
Like we made a music video. We made one for you, didn't it? That
Wait For Me. It was sick. But even before that, Ben had me flyering with him at Fabric at fucking 5 a.m. I had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Like, but he was putting on raves. Yeah, he was very proactive, like dub plates and he was on it.
And I feel like after Thailand was also when I started hanging out with Ben more as well. So it was like there was all these catalysts that were all kind of pushing towards like making things. And with you lot, obviously, it was just like these are some funny people with And this felt like a strong idea. Once we started thinking of it in terms of like, it's basically like The Office, but a pirate radio station. Like it's a fake documentary about a pirate radio. Like that just felt like instantly, that's a sick, like that's a good idea. And it's got like the music that we love. We can all DJ and MC, like we can play these characters and like, and know what we're doing.
I think that's so important thing to know, like the fact that like, we all shared the same taste in comedy, not just like sense of humor, but like the type of comedies we'd watched and the style of comedy as well. So like having that, it wasn't like a thing of like, well, I'm kind of into this and I'm kind of into that. It's like, yeah, we all love The Office and we want to make it as real as possible. So like documentary format, there's no question. Like we just found that the funniest at the time because we found real life so funny.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was the only comedy that we were kind of into, really.
Yeah, what you touched on is important, Steve, with the fact that you were in a, it felt like you were in a little bit of a sort of stale, dead end in your life kind of thing. And I think we all were at the same time. Yeah. That's why everyone wanted to put something towards this because they were doing nothing better.
It's true. Yeah. Had nothing but drive.
It's kind of a reflection of the, like, the education system a little bit as well, though, that, like, like I was saying, I was just kind of going through the motions of like getting to A levels, then getting my degree or whatever. And then you come out of it and there's nothing there. Like there's, you don't get any sort of like reward for getting out of like completing
you're
it.
You're kind of spat out with everyone else.
This is a prime example of it though. This is a prime example because you, Steve, were academic. You did everything. You went to uni, you passed. Yeah. Mm. Me and Hugo weren't academic. We went college, we tried to go uni, we failed, and we both found ourselves in exactly the same place in life, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
But the difference is that, like, for me or you to get a job at the council would be quite tough.
And Steve was winning.
Yeah, that's crazy though, isn't it? Like, the fact that you have to have a degree to get the lowest level admin job, like, in the shittest place, like, it's
me and Sipa were like retail, like that's pretty much call centers or retail is the option. Fucking hell, I'm so glad that we spunk that last student loan on Thailand, boy.
No, but seriously though, it kind of goes to show how like valuable life experiences are and like social experiences are, and the sort of, I mean, it's a fucking grim thing to start like talking about in the middle of a pandemic where we're not allowed to have contact, but like it's so key, like all of those experiences. Without them you can learn every bit of fucking data you can find, but like it's not gonna enrich your life. Like you gotta get out and hang out with people and enjoy yourself.
Yes, you man been on any drillings recently?
Nah,
say, man.
Calm.
Have you guys heard of the new Beats and Grinder podcast?
Nah, G. I heard it's their man in real life, though.
That's what I'm saying. It's so cotch.
Oh, gee, that sounds so crease.
It is, man, it is. Calm.
Calm, G.
Well, that was an absolute bloodbath.
I know, I was really getting into it then.
Laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes you've got to stop the laugh, yeah? And you've got to wait for another part.
Oh, you're it's too joking. Long.
Yeah, because if you laugh for too long, what happens?
You get tired and your cheeks hurt.
No, your ribs fall out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So be careful out there. Okay, trigger warning for anyone that's nearly died from laughing.
Yeah. Anyone with really loose ribs on the scene.
Yeah, be careful, okay? Part two coming soon. Get ready to enjoy again.
Thank you.
All right, see you later.
See ya.
Hey yo! Will everyone shut the fuck up? I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
No, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendie.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout out all the posse down at ACAS Laboratory. Hip-hop. Am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.